This is Startup Nation Radio, the show to learn about how to start and grow your own business.
You got to follow your own compass. You got to execute on what you really believe in.
Well, the principles of entrepreneurship, I think, are universal. I just got off a plane from India yesterday.
Business in India? Are you kidding me?
Entrepreneurs benefit from learning from each other.
Hey, Rich, you're calling in from The Nation. What do you have for us this week?
Well, first of all, The Nation is alive and well. Entrepreneurs are jamming it.
The time is now.
The real question is, do you have the confidence, the resources, and the support?
It's always a good time to get into business.
Don't stop believing.
It's time for Startup Nation with Jeff Sloan.
All right, it is indeed time for another great Startup Nation radio show. This is the show for you to learn about how to start and grow your dream business. Well, today is going to be a great show ahead. We're going to focus on a couple of different things. First, we're going to kick it off by talking to an expert about what you can do once you've started your business to measure data coming out of the marketplace to determine whether or not you're in the right track or whether you got to switch gears a little bit or go in this direction or that direction. We're going to learn about how to do just that. Even small businesses can do that. And then we're going to hear from a couple of great entrepreneurs who've kicked off some great, great businesses. We're going to hear their stories, how they got it going, and where they're headed. Stick with us. Great show ahead on Startup Nation Radio. All right, welcome to this edition of Startup Nation Radio. Today, we're sponsored by Walsh College, Comerica Bank, and Pappas Financial. Now, Pappas Financial has been a trusted advisor to business owners for over 40 years. They guide entrepreneurs on strategies that protect their businesses and personal assets, implement company benefit solutions, and provide a roadmap for businesses to set their succession plans and investment strategies. Get started right and stay on track. To help you do just that, get Pappas Financial on your team. Reach out to Norm Pappas and his team at 248-539-8292. Speaking of Norm, he won't be on the show with us this week. He'll be back next week. But great show ahead, and we're going to kick it off with a discussion with an expert who, for venture-backed businesses, high-tech businesses, maybe even larger corporations, what he does is he's able to go into the market and help them determine ways to see if they're headed in the right direction by analyzing data coming out of the marketplace. Now, it may seem counterintuitive, but small businesses can and should be doing exactly the same thing because, you know, you create a business plan, you set yourself on a course, you think you might be headed in the right direction, or maybe you're questioning whether you're headed in the right direction. But without data, you're really going on intuition and supposition, and, you know, it's not really the best way to make important decisions, really, in decisions that, in hindsight, you can look back at and say were pivotal. Having data to help you make those decisions really makes for a much more sound decision. And we're going to learn how small businesses, right now we're going to bring on the phone an expert again who can help us determine that data and make those more sound decisions. So we're going to bring on Robert, are you with us? Robert J. Moore from, you're the CEO, co-founder of RJ Metrics. Welcome to Startup Nation Radio.
That's right. It's great to be here, and thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, well, we got a chance to chat briefly before the show. Bob, can I call you Bob?
Absolutely.
All right. So, Bob, we got a chance to talk, and you gave me a great deal of confidence. Some I knew to be the case. I even learned a few things before we talked about the fact that small businesses really can, really, like big corporations, go out and access data in order to, you know, redirect and make sure they're on the right track and so on. Tell us. I mean, that's the case, right?
Absolutely, and I think there's been a really fundamental shift in the last couple of years in the marketplace where the availability of data for everybody, not just for the Fortune 500, not just for Silicon Valley technology companies, but for every company out there, has really grown in a pretty massive way. And I think it's kind of drifted from a place where those who use data can have an unfair advantage or a competitive advantage to data kind of being table stakes and something that everybody who's out there in the marketplace should be thinking about as they grow their business.
Right. And Bob, you know, there's some, let's just call it casual, unsophisticated ways to get data. For example, if I'm, let's say I've got a dog walking business. I mean, literally, data can be as simple as making sure I'm asking my customers the right questions about the service I'm providing and getting that feedback back and maybe putting it in some kind of organized fashion that I can, you know, where I can use that information. Would that be a fair statement?
Sure.
That's one way to do it, right?
Absolutely.
Yep. And another way to do it, though, is with more sophisticated tools to get that data out of the marketplace.
Sure. And I think that, data can be scary for a lot of people who are starting businesses, and rightfully so. There are people who have PhDs in this stuff, and obviously that if you're starting a business is probably not the best use of your next 8 years. So for those of us who don't have a PhD, the question really becomes, what are the best ways to go from nothing to something? Because it's really that first small step into using data that is actually going to deliver the most incremental impact to building your business.
And David, data is such a kind of dry, esoteric, even in some ways scary kind of thing. I mean, I can tell you, most entrepreneurs are not thinking about data when they're getting their business started, right? I mean, so what can they do? First of all, let's do this. Let's understand what types of data are critical. So at a very high level, for example, I made an example of, you know, the dog walker who's asking customers. So I'm getting customer feedback to make sure, you know, I'm performing the right service, maybe at the right price. So there's kind of market feedback kind of data. But there's other kinds of data, too. Like what?
Sure. And it's always funny when I hear people say that, you know, data is something that is not on the minds of entrepreneurs. I think the reality is that data is actually on your mind a lot more than you might think it is. Because
right.
When you're looking at your bank account and saying, am I going to make payroll this week? Or you're looking to see if your revenue is growing or your customer base is growing. That's data analysis that you're doing. And even though it doesn't feel like a math problem, it is really a critical part of understanding how things are going. So I think to answer your question, there are some really obvious categories around there around simple financial metrics in your business. And it's always a really healthy exercise. You might have a gut feeling that, yes, we're doing better than we were last year, or yes, we're growing at a pace that's acceptable to me. But really sitting down and looking at how many customers do I have today in this dog walking business versus 1 year ago today and versus 2 months ago today, and what does that growth rate represent? And if we keep that up, where's that going to put us a year or two down the road? These are ways of contextualizing your business around data that might actually change your perspective or lead you to believe that it's worth it for you to hire that additional person on your staff, or you're not doing well enough and need to put in more hours in order to grow faster.
And data, and that's good. And data, for example, another thing a small business might be able to do, let's say that I'm some ways to track data as a small business. I mean, I've got a website, for example. I can learn a lot of things from what's happening on that website from a data standpoint, can I?
Absolutely. And there are a lot of free, very easy to implement tools that you can use in order to discover those things. So there's a tool called Google Analytics, which is a website traffic statistics application that you can install a very simple kind of one-line change to your website, and suddenly you've got information about how many unique visitors are coming in, how long they stay on the site, what pages they go to and look at for the longest amount of time.
And I want to break down that. That's right. And I want to break down what each of these things mean, because this is really, I think this is now a part of the discussion where, again, aside from looking at your financial data, getting customer feedback from your marketplace, from your clients, you can use your website using Google Analytics as long as you can know what to do with the data, how to look at it, how to think about it, how to organize it, and what to do about it based on the information you're getting out of it. I want to talk about that in our next segment. We're going to get you for one more segment, I hope. Is that okay, Bob?
Sounds great.
All right, we're going to come back after this break, and then let's really drill down. Let's roll up the sleeves and go to work on how we find this data and what we do with it. Deep dive now. We're about to roll up our sleeves and go to work on how we can find out data in the marketplace and data coming inbound, data that exists within our businesses to determine whether or not we're on the right track with our new business or existing business. And we've got an expert who's helping us do just that, Robert J. Moore. Bob, welcome back to Startup Nation Radio.
Great to be back.
Yeah, you were a venture capitalist, by the way, at one time, weren't you?
I sure was.
Yeah, and so you had to, you used data a lot, I'll bet, to analyze those businesses and determine whether or not there was, you know, both good performance on the one hand and lots of opportunity yet ahead on the other hand.
Absolutely. As you can imagine, those VCs are a very sharp bunch, and they like to use everything that's available to them. So
yeah.
Data plays a big role.
Absolutely. Okay, now we were starting to talk about what tools we could use to actually access the data that's critical to even at a small business level to each of us in either starting a business or growing a business. So I got a little example for you here. What if I, as a small business owner, I sell something, whatever it is, and I decide to kick off, I don't know, some sort of advertising campaign. Let's say it's a Facebook ad campaign, and I get in front of 10,000 more people as a result of that ad campaign, and I get a meaningful percentage of them that came to my website, got lots of good traffic. You know, let's even say, wow, it's a major success. Let's say we get 5,000 of those 10,000 people to come to my website, but I only converted about 1% of them to make a purchase. Now, can I use, you know, some people might not think about things that way and start to break this down, but I'll bet I just gave you a problem that you know exactly how to start analyzing that, looking at the data and in a meaningful way that can give us some outcomes on what we need to look at, maybe improving, because we knew some things worked wildly, but something's wrong in that picture somewhere, right?
Absolutely. That actually sounds like an exciting situation to me, because one of the hardest problems that advertisers often have is getting people to click in the first place. And the fact that you've got people coming to your website means that there's something that was in that ad that got them excited. And the challenge is what's happening once they get to your site that's saying to them, oh, this is actually not what I was looking for.
Exactly right. So the example I gave you is that the ad was very powerful and compelling. I got people to come, and, you know, 50% response rate, amazing. Doesn't really happen that way, but it did. So something very powerful there. And they got to my website. I only converted 1% of those 5,000 people. Something went wrong at that point.
That's right. That's right. And there are a few things you can do in that situation. You know, the first thing that comes to my mind is this concept of an A-B test, which is basically when you build two versions of your website, or you send people that click on that ad to two completely different pages, and you see which one performs better in terms of converting people. Because it could very well be that they actually do want your product, and your product could provide value to them, but something about your messaging or your presentation is turning them away once they actually get there.
Well, so, it could be it could be messaging, or would it be fair to ask the question, well, where within the website? We know we got them to the website, 5,000 people came. What did they do when they got there, and where was the, you know, statistically, where were they abandoning the purchase opportunity? You know, where were they leaving? So was it that they came to the page and they didn't like the messaging? Mm-hmm. Or was it that they came to the website and, you know, didn't like the checkout process? They abandoned the shopping cart?
So
first you need to figure out, where's the problem, right? And you can
right.
and you can do that all by data, right? You can see where, you know, which pages they went to and where they jettisoned their opportunity to make a purchase.
That's right. This gets into this concept of the conversion funnel. And if
there we go.
Picture right. a funnel, and at every step along the way, there's going to be a lower and lower percentage of the initial starting population that that exists. And in the case you described, your conversion funnel starts really big at the top. 10,000 people saw your ad, and then 5,000 of them clicked it, and that's kind of the next step in the funnel. But then only a much smaller percentage, only 50 or so of them, actually went through and made a purchase. The great question that you are asking is, did we skip a step in the funnel there? In going from 5,000 to 50, there might have been more than just one step, like a clicking the buy button. There might have been a shopping checkout process. There might have been an examination of the details of the product, the photos related to the product. They might have looked at basically the way that you're talking about what the product is or pricing the product. All these things we can instrument and understand better by using tools like Google Analytics that I mentioned before to really follow the activity that's going on your site.
Right, and then you can use that information to then say, aha, I found where the problem is here. Maybe I'm not, you know, maybe I didn't say the price of my product in the ad. There was a certain assumption made by the population of what they believe the value of it to be. They get to the website, we lead them down to the actual purchase page, and that's the first time we show the price. And the price is, you know, 10 times higher than they expected it to be, and that's where they run.
Right.
And so we can use this data to figure out first where the problem is, and that's really helpful to a small business owner.
Absolutely.
And Google Analytics is a free tool made available by Google.
That's right.
It's fundamental. You got to have it. Okay, so that's an example of how we can use data coming off our website to first figure out where the problem is. Because, boy, the last thing you want to do is have a great campaign where you drive lots of traffic, because that's one of the hardest things for a small business to do anyway. You get the traffic to your site, boy, you sure as heck do not want to lose a customer if you get them there.
That's the truth. Yeah, that's the worst place to lose them.
That's for
sure. You've already paid for them.
All right, and what else? I mean, other than Google Analytics, let's talk about other. We talked about, you know, the customer feedback out of the marketplace. We talked about financial data you can glean from your financial records. But what else should a small business be looking at in terms of tracking data, and what tools might be available to do that?
Sure. I'm a big fan of tracking customer satisfaction. And it sounds like a really simple thing, but there's this concept of a metric known as the Net Promoter Score that I'm a huge fan of, that basically is a measurement of how likely people are to help your product go viral or to talk about it amongst their friends. And that, if you look at the Net Promoter Score number for companies across the board, it's a very, very telling predictor of the growth rate of those companies in the future.
You know, I got to tell you, I know a lot about startups. I know a lot about small business. I've had a lot of experience. I've never heard the term Net Promoter Score. So this is an even greater day on Startup Nation Radio because I'm learning right alongside everybody else, and I love it. And that's a good, okay. So tell us, how do you
absolutely
what is it, and how do you get the information in order to, you know, and then how do you think about it? What do you do with it?
Got it. And the interesting thing about Net Promoter Score is I guarantee that everybody out there listening has been part of a Net Promoter Score study at some point in time without even knowing it. If you've ever answered the question on a scale of 0 to 10, how likely are you to refer this product to a friend? You've been part of a Net Promoter Score study because the Net Promoter Score study is one question, and it's that question. And what you do is you ask as many of your customers as possible that question, and you look at the results, and you take the percentage of people that answered a 9 or a 10, so the really big promoters who love your product, and then you subtract away the percentage that answered from 0 to 6, so people that either strongly dislike your product or are kind of neutral or negative on it. And you kind of disregard the 7s and 8s, which are kind of in wishy-washy territory. And that gives you a number. And that number is somewhere between 0 and 100. And it tells you the strength of the promoters out there promoting your brand, how many of your customers are really driving that promotion. And the cool thing about Net Promoter Score is that thousands and thousands of companies have calculated it and published their results. So you can actually benchmark the success of your business from a promoter perspective against big brands, everybody from Walmart to Amazon to Comcast Cable. You can go and look at their Net Promoter Score and see where you fall and what brands you're like. And that can really be telling in terms of whether you're doing a good job or not and whether you need to spend more energy on that customer satisfaction.
All right, I love that metric. That's a great tip. Now, how do I, as a small business owner, though, is there some sort of program I can use? Or, you know, I mean, you quickly ran through the, you know, the how you size up the scoring and everything, but is there some sort of, you know, a formula, a program that I can use to determine this for myself? Or do I have to just learn how to do it and make sure I'm disciplined to do it?
Oh, it's it can be very simple. So the most simple way is just to ask your customers. So if you have a traditional brick and mortar store or you have a service business like the dog walking business we were talking about earlier, it can be as simple as once every 6 months, you give a simple paper survey to your customers when you leave them your bill that they'll send back with it, or even you ask them in person. And that's probably, in a lot of cases, if you've been asked this question before, it's been in the checkout line or in some other transactional setting.
So, yeah, and that's the thing about data. It's out there. It's as obvious as that. Actually, it's coming. It's inbound. It's hitting us all the time. And when it's not even hitting us on an inbound basis, you can retrieve it or draw it out of your community, your audience, your clientele, your customer base if you're just proactive about it.
Yeah, and it's free. I mean,
it's free.
As long as you're not wearing your customers down by asking them every single day that question. If you do it every few months, it's a good way to get a cadence around collecting feedback from your customers, and it's really not an inconvenience to them.
Yep, and in the minute or so we have left in this segment, and by the way, your information has been amazing. We'd love to have you back and learn more. But let me ask you, Bob, I know what you do if you learn that everything's great on my Net Promoter Score. You keep doing more of it. But what do I do if it's not? You know, I go to the benchmarking, and I see that I'm in an industry where the score should be, you know, whatever it is, 85, and I'm scoring 72.
Mm-hmm.
How do I put that in context? How do I figure, okay, so I'm not doing so great. How do I know where the problem is?
So one of the things that you can do that I'm a big fan of is a side effect of collecting Net Promoter Score from individuals is that you know who gave you what score. And this is a great opportunity to start a conversation with your customers that has some context to it and that kind of doesn't seem forced or in other ways awkward. If you've got somebody who scored you a 4 and you wish they scored you a 10, they probably, by giving you a 4, have something on their mind. And just by virtue of whatever crossed through their head when they decided to give you that low number, they're probably willing to spend another 30 seconds or a minute, or maybe you can take them out to lunch and have a longer conversation about what it is that's at the core of that. And if you do that for a handful of your customers, you might be surprised what you learn. And in fact, I would recommend that people do that even if their Net Promoter Score is great, because really understanding why people are happy
is just as important in order to keep it going. Well, Bob, unfortunately, we got to cut it off there for this edition, but I'd love to have you back again. We're going to keep checking back with you and keep learning from you. You know, we make a promise at Startup Nation Radio to deliver value to our customers, and that is our listeners. I got to tell you something. You helped us hold up our promise today. Thanks so much, Bob, for being on.
Thank you. It's been a blast.
All right, great. Thanks. I learned something really cool in that last segment. I love that. You know, when you're starting or growing a new business, you're so deep into the, you know, the vision and are we on the right track and pouring your energy into it. And, you know, you've got yourself set and you're focused on the minutiae and you're rolling everything out and you have no idea kind of where you are at times in a small business. And being able to look at data to determine whether you're on the right track or whether or not you need to turn right or turn left or a little of both occasionally, that is really cool. And I heard about Net Promoter Score in our last segment. It was a really interesting discussion, and it really reminds us that the data that we need to make more sound decisions about our small businesses and how they're performing and what we ought to be doing in directing them is out there, and it's available. And more than that, it's free. All we have to do is look for it, seek it out, and do something about it, analyze it, and do something about it. Okay, well, we can't go looking for data on how our business is doing until we get a business started. And we're going to talk to an entrepreneur in this segment, Nancy Oram, who did just that. She's living her dream, started a company called Stays On Eyewear. Nancy, welcome to Startup Nation Radio.
Thank you very much, Jeff. It's a pleasure to be here today.
Well, it's great to have you. You got a great story. You always wanted to start a business.
I did. You know, in my early 20s, I've always been fascinated with inventions and how an idea turns into a product. And I came up with a couple of ideas in my early 20s, but at the time, I decided that school was more necessary and a career. So I kind of put my ideas on hold, and 25 years later...
Well, you also had plenty of naysayers on some of those earlier ideas,
I did.
Too, right? And unfortunately, you listened to them.
I did.
That happens to all of us. That happens to all of us. This stuff's tough. It's likely not to succeed. You got those voices talking in your head, and you didn't start those, but you started this one.
I did. And that was a good learning lesson in my 20s, is you have to, if you don't believe in your product, nobody will. And that was my big message 25 years later, is the way you start your business is by believing in yourself and believing in your product, and the rest will just follow.
Yes. So, if you're passionate about it, if you believe it, if you're driven, if you can't be told no, boy, that's powerful. That's powerful.
Failure is not an option.
Failure is not an option.
It's just not.
All right, so Nancy, tell us, the product is what?
The product is, Stays On Eyewear is a lifestyle brand for women's sunglasses and readers that features an innovative headband that's built right inside of the inner frame and the temples of the eyewear that helps keep your glasses securely on you. So everybody has had this experience, Jeff, of losing their glasses. They slip, they fall off. And that's what happened to me 3 years ago.
I have a huge problem with that. By the way, you said only women, right? Women's glasses?
We have women's now, and we'll be expanding into men's later this year.
Yeah, because men, right. I mean, the same thing. You know, I know, so here's the way the product works. You've got the headband built into the sides, in effect, and it really, you can't really see it. It's just the mechanisms of the headband that effectively help the glasses grasp your head and stay on top of your head, right?
Exactly.
When you put them back. And then it acts like a headband. You're pulling your hair back a little bit. But for a guy, it just helps them stay on the top of your head so you don't lose them. If you don't have a pocket handy, whatever it may be. And I have to tell you, I lost a great pair of sunglasses about 4 months ago. And
so it's personal.
Yeah, it is.
It's personal because
it's
your favorite pair and you don't want to lose them. It's not the money. It's your favorite pair. And that's what happened to me 3 years ago. I was at a Pistons game, and I went to the ladies' bathroom. The glasses fell on the floor. They were permanently damaged. And I thought, there has to be a better way to help keep your glasses on. But I didn't want to compromise my fashion.
That's a huge issue. That's a huge issue, because it's one thing to create the utility and functionality of something that won't cause your glasses to be lost or to help you not to lose them. But if you're going to sacrifice functionality or fashion, and functionality in other ways, in other words, they still got to be a great pair of sunglasses.
Exactly.
Number one. And number two, they got to look great, right?
They have to have the basic criteria of having a great quality product. It's got to be fashionable and appealing to the consumer. And if you can bring that value add of functionality into that product, then you've really got a win-win situation. And I told myself very early on, if I wasn't going to buy it, I wasn't going to make it. I'm my toughest critic. And I said to myself, it has to be something that has this universal appeal that really solves a problem.
Sure.
And my recommendation to entrepreneurs starting off and thinking about getting a business started is your business going to solve a problem? because that's what people want. In this busy world of, you know, you've got social media, you're in this instant gratification world,
yep.
is how is my life going to become easier? How is this going to solve a problem for me today?
Yep. Now, you had to tackle finding out a way to, you know, have the glasses, you had the mechanisms, if you will, the engineering of how the glasses were going to better grip your head when you pulled them back. And by the way, when you have them on, you can't even tell that it's anything other than a pair of sunglasses on your head. It's just that I saw you did a little demo beforehand, and they don't move. They don't go anywhere. They stay on the top of your head. So that's great. You had to figure that part of it out, and clearly you have that down. You also had to deal with the fashion aspect, and then you had to deal with making sure the glasses were good quality sunglasses or reader glasses, whatever they may be. That's complex. Things seem simple on the surface. That's a complex equation to solve, right? You had to do a lot of thinking about all that. How'd you do it?
It is and it isn't. It's it is, the engineering is it is complex. You have to make sure that this product fits, it's a universal product. So you have to make sure it fits everybody. You have to make sure that it doesn't compromise the look.
Right.
It doesn't touch your face or reflect off the lens. So those were important
criteria.
It's got to
be at a price point.
It's got to be affordable.
Right.
And as I was developing the patent at the initial, which was the initial stage of this process, was, you know, you have this idea, you have your aha moment. How does that materialize into something, into a product?
Into a product, right, that's going to make it to the market.
And it was, you know, initially I thought, how do I do this? And actually for 10 years, I've always worn a pair of glasses and a headband. So for me, it came naturally. I thought, how can I integrate these two products that are two separate products into one product and make it a seamless design?
Right, but you're not changing an existing pair of glasses, and this isn't an add-on.
It is not.
It is not.
You're actually not.
Literally, for your design, I mean, you really have control over the design of the glasses too, right? Everything.
Exactly,
everything.
Yes. I'm involved in every aspect of the business, and I choose to be.
Yep.
And
okay, so you had to come up with the basic design of the product, then you had to get it manufactured. How'd you do that? Are you paying through contract manufacturing? Did you license it, or how are you getting this product produced?
I licensed the technology to Fantis Eyes. They are one of the largest private label manufacturers in the world, and they manufacture to some of the major retailers, and they also do distribution. I decided early on, coming from a different industry, which is automotive, I have an automotive background, and I was immersing myself now in a completely different industry and reinventing myself at this point. And I decided I need to understand my strengths and weaknesses right away. And my strengths are certain marketing skills and so on, but I'm not an expert in the eyewear industry. So I sought a strategic partner that did just that.
That is beautiful. So what you did is, instead of going out and manufacturing it yourself, and they're probably doing now a lot of the design work and everything, right? They're incorporating
this
into their line.
Yes, yes.
That's great. That answers a lot of the challenges. Now, in order to license to a company like that, you have to have more than an idea. Did you have your IP, your patent, your intellectual property protection issued at that point, or was it filed? Where were you in that process?
At the time, my first step, and what I would recommend, is when you have this idea and you want to formalize it, is to seek out a patent attorney and talk to them. Just have a conversation about your idea and get some advice. Typically, that first conversation is free. Yeah. And that's what I did. I did not even have a prototype at the time. I just had a vision. And I explained it to the attorney, and she said, you know what, this could be a good idea, but we have to follow the right steps. And you have to do that due diligence. You're excited, you think you have a great idea, you think it's marketable, but you have to take a step back in the beginning.
So you have to do some patent searching.
And do patent searching through the USPTO.
Right.
And do some, you can do a lot of legwork yourself as an entrepreneur.
Especially now.
Before you seek counsel.
Right.
And I went into, prior to working with Fantis Eyes, I had established the provisional utility and the utility for the U.S., and then I work towards the international patents.
Okay, so let's break that down quickly. So the provisional is where you it's a few hundred dollars, excuse me, where you don't have to be real exact on your idea. You don't have to include the specifications or anything. All you do is you file, which basically at a high level describes the idea and then establishes a filing date or a priority date for you, right?
Exactly.
And then it gives you a year to file the actual utility patent.
Yes.
Exactly. And at that point, you file a utility patent, which then needs all of the detail and the drawings, the specifications. You got to be very detailed. And you put your claims in there. Okay. But when you go to seek a license agreement, and a license agreement is where you granted the right to this other company to make it and to pay you a royalty, right?
Exactly.
All right. Where, what point did you have, where were you in the patent process when you could close a license deal?
I was right in the utility phase.
So it was filed.
Yes,
filed,
it was
but
filed.
Not issued.
Not issued.
Patent pending.
It's patent pending right now. Right. The patent process takes many years. So you are able to actually make the product, but you have to wait for the patent for it to become patented.
Yep.
But when I approached Fantas, it was at the utility stage.
Okay, now to be continued. We're going to bring you back right after this break. We're right in deep in the heart of it here. This is great. We're learning about how you do this, how you get a license agreement, and how you bring a product to market without you having to manufacture it. All right, getting right back into it. Our sponsors today, Walsh College, Comerica Bank, Pappas Financial. Don't want to waste a minute. Let's get right back to it. We've got Nancy Oram, and you've got your sunglass and eyeglass reader business rolling. And we're doing it through a license agreement, meaning we granted the right to another company to produce and sell your product, the product that you invented.
Yes.
And let me ask you, we now know kind of how at a very high level the license thing went. And you're now paid a royalty on every sale, right, per unit royalty. I'm going to guess in the range of 5 to 10%. Would that be fair?
Yes.
Off of net proceeds. Okay, so net sales. All right. Do you have any costs at this point, or are they paying for everything?
No, I own all of the IP rights, and that's where the majority of my costs have been.
Filing the patent
and protection. Filing
and
filing the
so
patents.
Yeah. Yep.
The international patents are very costly, so going into that, I wanted to make sure that I was setting aside, you know, funding to support that. Because once you have your idea and you have a U.S. presence, if it's a universal product, you want to try to expand to the international market.
Yep. All right. Now, both you and the license, let's see, this would be the licensee, right?
Yes.
The licensee. You're the licensor. The licensee, being the company that's now producing and selling this, you both have incentive to make sales. What is the working relationship now, and how do you create the awareness? How do you create interest? You know, how do you do all that now? And who's responsible? Who pays for that?
You know, what we do, Jeff, is we work very closely together on getting the message and the brand awareness out, because it's a brand new product and it's a brand new invention. So I believe that social media is absolutely critical to your business in terms of getting closer to your consumer, getting your brand awareness out there, getting your product to be able to expand to different, different parts of the world. It's absolutely critical. And we use all of the social media platforms every day. We want to make sure that the product is fresh, it's relevant, and that people understand it's solving a problem for them.
Yep, that's great. And it's so demonstrable. That's one of the cool things about the product, is that, you know, you can see it. And it's easy to demonstrate, both on, you know, through social media and advertising, et cetera. So you have a product, as opposed to a product that, say, is, you know, under the hood. You don't
exactly
see it.
So we utilize YouTube, so we
right.
can do demonstrations.
Exactly.
We get our consumers involved in the process.
Exactly.
And what you had mentioned earlier with Bob is you have to get them involved. And it has to be an interactive process. And then once people understand it, they love it.
And are you making sales now?
Yes, we are. We're currently right now online, and we're in 25 stores throughout the U.S.
Wow.
And we'll be expanding more this summer.
Really cool. I know you're going to be a huge success. I know you are. You're on top of your game.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for sharing your story. And
we're gonna
continue to follow your story. We'd love to have you back on and see how it's going. Well,
thank you, Jeff.
Thanks for being on. Michael Keith, another entrepreneur, joining us in studio, Startup Nation Radio. You've created a concept for is it an office, or is it a coffee shop, or is it both? It's the office coffee shop, and it's a kind of a concept where you can rent office space, even by the hour.
Yep.
And you have all the amenities of what, you know, Howard Schultz at Starbucks calls the third place, right?
That is true, yes.
But it's your place.
It is
It's your place. Well, and it's the person who's renting the office's place to be able to have the access to coffee and pastries and other things right in the office. So it's a broader experience. Tell us about it.
Yeah, we wanted to really create a vibrant space for small businesses to thrive and reduce their cost and increase their bottom line. So,
and small businesses do, like, I don't know what it is. You know, I actually read an article one time that said doing business in a coffee shop actually makes you more creative.
It does. It's all about the, you know, the decibel level and the creativity.
That's what they say. That's exactly right.
You hit that spot, and it really helps drive natural networking also at the same time. Coffee shops, you know, you think of one area, where you might have a problem. You might be an engineer or you might be a pharmaceutical sales. A lot of the same problems, you know, really can be solved the same way. So you can find ways through networking with other people in the coffee shop to really get to the root problem.
And your first location is in Royal Oak, Michigan.
Yep.
Oh, is it open now or opening soon?
We're opening soon. We're looking to open up later this month.
Okay. And tell us what's available. I'm an entrepreneur out there. I'm looking for office space. You know, whether our listener happens to be in Royal Oak or not, you're going to go national, aren't you?
We hope to.
You hope to. You better believe it. All right. So, the concept is what? Sell me.
We are a space where you can come in and have a meeting. You can rent a individual office for 1 hour, 5 hours, and we find that you can really reduce any type of rent or cost that you would assume if you had to go out to the space and rent an office.
So it's kind of like pay as you go. Pay as you use it.
It's all pay to play.
Pay to play. I mean, in other words, I'm not paying when I don't need it. I'm only paying when I do.
Yep, and we also have a large training room that can host about 15 to 20 people. To where you could do product demos such as our sunglasses over here.
You could
pitch it to some additional investors or you know, different places like that.
Are there shared services available?
Yep. We offer printing, scanning. We've got lockers and all of the office amenities that you need. But then we also really provide that coffee shop atmosphere that allows that vibrant, you know, networking.
Kind of that hum.
That hum, 100%.
I love it. Tell me this now. I'm an entrepreneur. If I'm using your service, the one thing I don't have is a place that where I go all the time that's mine. I mean, of course, you know, I'm moving in, moving out. I'm using it as I go.
And that's where we really focus on the lockers and just really using the space as you need it. So if you are having a conference call, you're going to want to say, hey, Mike, can I rent the office, you know, one of the offices for an hour or two so I can get on my conference call? When you're done with that, you can get out back into the open space and just work and do what you need to do. If you really need that really closed room feel, it allows you to go in and use that when you need it. So most of the time, you don't have to. I mean, you look at the office space and the transformation of how offices are ran nowadays. They're all in that open workspace feel. So that's what we're going to be able to provide them.
Yep. And what I love about this most, for example, small business operators who are based at home, that's got to be a great opportunity for them. I mean,
the remote working is only going to just increase as we go. And it allows people to get that third space, and they can work in their office for their house maybe for a little bit.
Yeah.
But they want to get out and actually, you know, meet people and collaborate. And, you know, that's what we've really found has been helpful for us to start the business is to collaborate with a lot of different vendors. A lot of them are Michigan-based, and, you know, that's where we have with our coffee providers.
And if I want to book a meeting 2 weeks out, there's got to be some sort of calendar or something I can go to. I find the available time, I book it that way, and then I book my meeting. And I know 100%. I've got a spot, and it's my spot for that amount of time, and it's at your place.
Yep, and it's a professional atmosphere to where that, you know, you're not walking into somebody's family room and having a meeting with an individual, but it's also private to where that if you're talking about, you know, financial planning or anything of that nature, it allows you to have that, you know, comfort that not, you know, you don't have the guy sitting next to you listening to
I love it. I really do. I think it's a much needed service. I really do. It kind of blends the idea of, you know, as you say, having an office plus the advantage of the coffee space with all the hum and the buzz and all the creativity that's coming with that. But yet, as you just said, one thing I can't stand at a coffee place, you don't know who's sitting next to you and over listening in on the conversation, or maybe sometimes that buzz is too loud.
Yeah,
whatever it may be.
You really want to try to make sure you have the time in the area that you can keep focused on your space.
Yep, I love it. I love the idea. Listen, good luck to you. How do they find you?
They can find us on Facebook and LinkedIn at theofficecoffeeshop.com.
Theofficecoffeeshop.com. Check it out. This is going to be a winner. We're going to check back with you, Michael. We want to hear about your progress. Good luck to you. It's launching soon. Well, great show on Startup Nation Radio. Never enough time to cover it all, but a great, great show full of lots of good information. Hope you enjoyed it, and we look forward to having you back in the audience next Saturday on Startup Nation Radio.